Accession number 16618, Reel 4.
Mr. Papworth, Reel 4.
But it's much too strong for us, and we wouldn't eat it if we could avoid it.
What had been your first impression of the Chinese close-up?
Very difficult, because we didn't know what attitude they would take. And then when they turned nasty or angry when we tried to bring the wounded off, we thought the best thing to do was to keep quiet.
What had you thought of them in battle?
I think they were very good soldiers. But the basic thing with the Chinese is that they push them in waves. It's not the amount of firepower as itself, but the amount of men that they can put in. It's the quantity of the men they can put in, because they could fire in front of them. They could attack frontally, but they've got so many men that they could surround you without any difficulty whatsoever.
How do they compare with the British soldier?
I think the British are more stable. I think, put it that way. I think the Chinese are more, have more of an aggressive stance. I think the aggression is more their Oriental rather than. We haven't got that, have we?
I don't think so.
No.
So you were talking about the trek north, if you can pick it up from there, please.
Yeah. Well, then, during these marches, there was very little water about, and consequently, although you could get, the thing was, you drank hot water. But if you were in a village, you could have get. But if during the night and you were marching, I mean, it was very difficult. So the water that you drank could either come from a stream, and more often than not, it was infected. It wasn't clean. So it wasn't long before dysentery started. And then there were, you would find that you were scratching, and you would find that you were lousy. You'd find that there were lice about, and you had to eradicate them. On occasion on the march, perhaps you would feel a bit faint, or and perhaps you might stagger. You'd have to, your friends would keep you going, but you marched every night. Every night, from about 8 o'clock until 4 o'clock in the morning, until the last day. There was one thing. There was a schoolhouse, and that was supposed to be halfway house. Now, anyone who had suffered from dysentery or was weakened by the march, they would spend 3 or 4 days resting there. Others would carry on. You would be in a hut. There was no separation at that time, because I was in the same hut as at one stage, as at the halfway house, with Drummy Bus, Major Ward, and the Padre. And we used to go up in the small hills of the village during the day, and come down late afternoon. To my knowledge, we weren't given anything special for anything at that stage. Then the last day of the march, we was a rather a big place. I would think that it was farming, a farmhouse, but it was a very large building, a very large barn. And we were put in there all in rows. And they must have been trying to get as many people there as possible, because one of the Chinese came along and he was kicking people into place. I don't say he was doing it deliberate, as you deliberately kick somebody. I'm not suggesting that. But at least he was kicking people into place. And he kicked me into place. And he must have struck a raw nerve, because I kicked him back. I was accused of having hit him with a stick, which is, I never did. But certainly I kicked him back. And the next thing, I was given a going over with rifle butts. And then I was taken out, and they have a particular punishment. They tie your wrists separately and then together. They tie your ankles together. Then they hook the rope round your neck, and then they hook it to a tree, and they put it just high enough so that your toes are just about touching the ground. Now, if you fainted, you would hang yourself. And I had a number of hours on that. And then if a Chinese came along and looked at you, if he didn't like the look of you, then he struck you with his gun again. But I was tied for several hours. I know someone from the Northumberland Fusiliers brought me some water. And then towards evening, I was untied. And they were insisting that I should admit that I hit the man with a stick, and I kicked him. Well, there was a dispute about the stick. But the only answer that we had with the Chinese was that if you misbehaved and they wanted to criticise yourself, which was, of course, in the communist doctrine, you could criticise yourself in front of all your mates quite happily. Nobody would take any notice, and that's literally what happened. And eventually it was all that's it. But there are quite a number of people who have been tied up for hours on end. Well, then we arrived in a prison camp during the day, and we got allotted billets, and the billets would be divided, say, between 100 men, and in each billet would be 10 men. It was just about room enough, feet to feet, just about. But it was very cramped.
What prison camp was this?
Camp One. That was at Chok Song. When we arrived there, the Americans, we saw a continuous procession of Americans who had died and were being carried up to what we called Boot Hill. Because the Americans that were in the camp had been treated a lot worse than we had. And they had been captured quite some time before we had. But they had quite a number of deaths. And we could hardly believe it. Sometime after we arrived, whether it was by example or what, I don't know, but it stopped. And we were not in the same boat. What we actually did, we waited. We didn't do anything necessary out of place, and we waited to see how we would be treated and how the regime would go. At one stage, we were plagued by thousands of flies. The flies were terrible. And so there were so many that the Chinese came across with a brilliant idea that if you killed over 200 or something flies, whichever squad of 10 men collected the most dead flies, they would get paper to make cigarettes. The Chinese supplied us with a certain amount of tobacco. There was a packet. It had to last perhaps about a fortnight or a month. And we got a certain quantity of sugar. The food was sorghum, which they feed to pigs, and which, if I'm right, is a starvation, vegetable grown in the Far East in case of starvation or shortage of food. But sorghum was the staple diet at one stage. Bean shoots, bean curd from soya beans, and beans. It wasn't all that long before certain men began to get vitamin deficiency. Some men gave up fairly easily. Others just battled on and got over it. But there were a number who gave up, who had had enough. Because after all, you have to consider that we'd marched to the camp for what's the estimate is that we marched 400 miles. We had started in April and we had arrived in the camp, I think, the beginning of June. So that gives you some idea. We had a river running by the camp. It was heavily polluted, but we didn't worry too much about it. We didn't think much of, too much of that, because, I mean, you have to wash and if it's polluted, it's polluted. The dysentery still lingered. The vitamin deficiency was there. Some would get beriberi. Some would get what one called happy feet. It was a vitamin deficiency, but it causes very severe pain in the feet. There's great difficulty in walking. Soon after we got to the camp, they told us that the pea stalks were on. Then when they recessed, they would say that the pea stalks were off. Now, depending on who the Chinese was, who was telling us, if he got his words wrong, the meaning was misconstrued. See, all the things that happened with the pea stalks was that there was a recess, and that recess could take a matter of a few days or a matter of a few weeks. And of course, the view always pushed by the Chinese was that it was the Americans who were always in the wrong. We got some mail. Some people got quite a lot. Some got the odd one or two, and some got none at all. Um, we used to have every so often, not too often, but every so often, what we called a stodge-up. We used to get fresh pork, and when I say fresh, very fresh, fish and rice. Now, it was very oily, and of course that it didn't improve the health at all. As far as sickness goes, what used to happen, men who were sick, who wanted to go and see the doctor, we used to take them up and we would explain to the doctor in English what they were suffering from or what they were complaining of, in the hope that they would get something for it. And they may be given tablets. More often it was in powder form, in little packets. We never knew what those powders were. The only very definite thing that I ever found out was that somebody produced for me quite a lot of little tablets, and they said, what are these? So I went to a friend of mine who was IMC, but he wouldn't have anything to do with the Chinese. I said, what do you think this is? Well, he said, taste it. And I did. And it was potassium citrate. Don't use it. What it does is it turns acid into alkaline when you've taken it. What that had to do with it, I don't know. But there were a lot of those tablets around.
Did the Chinese say what the tablets were supposed to do?
No. No.
Or what conditions they were supposed to treat?
No. It was it's a question of luck. Whether what they gave you cured you, made an improvement, or what it did. It was very difficult. Medical facilities were very difficult. I was asked to go and see someone by one of his mates. I was asked to go and see someone in one of the huts who was ill, and see what I could do for him. So I went. And it would appear that he suffered, that he had got dysentery. And I decided that something should be done for him. If he wouldn't go to the Chinese, well, somebody had to do something for him. So I went to a Chinese instructor, and I said that this chap was ill and he ought to be getting treatment. So I left it at that. The next thing was that he was consulting the Daily Life Committee as to what they thought of me. This is what the daily life thought of me. Now, the daily life committee was a committee of our own men who were appointed by the Chinese, but made to look as if we had done it ourselves. They were all our own men. They must have spoken highly of me, because this chap was taken to hospital the next morning, I think, or at least the next day.
What was the Daily Life Committee, some kind of collaboration?
Not in the accepted sense. They might help the library, but the library consisted of mostly communist books. Or they might advise the Chinese on a few things that they were capable of doing, which would improve conditions to that much, to a little bit. But generally, it was Chinese orientated. I mean, they were. It was just a front.
Was the Daily Life Committee acceptable to the POW?
Yes. Yes. The thing is that this chap who went to hospital, now I escorted him up there with a Chinese escort. And when I went there, I only saw inside. I didn't. They opened the door and the chap went in, that was it. I had to come back. There was no going through the building or anything of that sort. But it was all fully equipped. And I even saw French penicillin there, which means that they were better equipped for caring for the prisoner's health than they actually did.
So they were withholding medicine?
Of course. It was just show. And then we knew within 2 days that the king had died. And that came from somebody who was doubtful, put it that way. I don't know whether he collaborated or not, but for certain. But his credentials were, he was English, and he was a soldier. But certainly he told us that the king had died. But of course we couldn't say anything, because it came on the grapevine, and if they knew that he had been giving us information from there, it wouldn't have helped him much at all. But anyway, and nothing happened for